This is a Collider.com audio interview.
No, not for me. I took a break. Watched the football game. So.
What was the final score?
42-39.
It was 39.
3 points. Wow. It was a pretty good game.
So
Michigan kind of blew it.
I'm sorry.
Michigan kind of blew it, I think.
Yeah. So how was the jungle experience for you before you left? You must have had an idea of how it was going to go, and how did it actually go?
I think making the decision to go to Brazil filled a lot of people with a bit of dread and fear, especially the financiers. You know, there was a lot. There was just, I guess, Brazil in people's conscience. You're going to go down there, you're going to get kidnapped, you're going to get robbed, you're going to get raped. And given that is the kind of setup, everything went pretty darn well. I mean, when we first got to Brazil, our first scout, we were 5 minutes outside of the airport, and we look over in rush hour traffic, and there's a guy robbing a woman in a car at gunpoint. So you're like, okay, this place is pretty, you know, what's next if that happened in the first 5 minutes? But for the most part, we were treated really well. Jungle was I don't know, what I loved about working there was we had a largely Brazilian crew. They operated in such a kind of efficient way. If you needed to get equipment mile and a half up jungle trail, they hired local kids to get it up, and if you need a kid to jump off the waterfall, you hire a local kid to do it. You don't bring in an American stunt guy. It was a kind of more expedient, guerrilla by any means necessary style of filmmaking, which I liked.
Are you going to be the king of the water films now, or what? Because you
my next movie I think is going to be in the snow.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's like I'm doing another movie. I think it's either going to be in the snow or it's going to be with pot smugglers in Vancouver. I love the water, and I love working in it because it's, for me, it's really peaceful, and it removes a certain kind of crew or collection of people around monitors and in your ear. If like we were in some caves in the water, way deep, mile in, no one could get in. So it was just me and the DP and the actors, and I felt very free.
So do you, when you're looking at scripts, do you just look at the ones set in awesome places to travel to?
You know what? I've never turned anything down because it wasn't set there. Let me think. That's an interesting question. I did a movie. I did Cheaters in Toronto. That's not that exotic. Crazy Beautiful was L.A. That's not that interesting. Blue Crush, Hawaii, not bad. Into the Blue, the Bahamas. Brazil. Brazil is actually, I've never had a better, I don't think there's been a movie where, even in the Bahamas, the actors by the end of it were like, get me the fuck out of here, I can't wait to leave. Hawaii even, the people were like, yeah, it's okay, but I want to go home. Brazil, I think people really would have stayed, like they loved it. They were so seduced by the country and the people and the culture and the food and the whole experience that I never got a single person going, okay, I'm done, I want to go home now.
Well, Olivia was saying that in Brazil compared to the U.S. is that everyone's the same except for the director, that you're the top and then everyone else is the same.
Yeah.
Did you kind of feel that and did you see that happen?
Yeah, there's a reverence for the director that's a little unsettling in some ways. Like they really put you up on a throne that you're technically not. They were very weirded out by the fact that I socialized with them and went out to clubs and parties with them. That's not the norm, I guess, but it's not. Yeah, it's not a producer-driven culture. It's or even an actor-driven culture. Because in America, it's the actors who basically drive that train, and not in Brazil. It's definitely the director.
Could you talk a little bit about the casting process?
The casting process. Josh would cast first. One of our producers, Scott Steindorf, produces Las Vegas, brought me there. The set, met him, just such a, I was looking for a guy that was centered and solid and American in the classic sense of the word. He was from North Dakota. He was like going to dental school or something before he decided to be an actor. Like there was something completely, he felt to me like a guy could go to Brazil and order a Coke, like a guy. I asked him, have you been anywhere? I've been to Cancun. He not, in a good way. Then we brought in the other actors, and we did huge, big mix and matches where we kind of
pair up girls and guys in a room and see who worked together, who felt right together, who liked each other, who didn't like each other. You know, it was a big kind of free for all. And I encouraged, I would do a lot of improvisation and sort of see how people handled that. You could kind of tell who liked each other, who didn't like each other. I had all the girls come in and tell me, like, oh, there's this girl here. She does the movie. We're not doing it. You know? I was like, all right. I almost wanted to cast her just to see, because I'm a provocateur. I've done it before. On Blue Crush and Crazy Beauty. Yeah, I did a lot. I've done a lot of that. I've thankfully had movies where I haven't had to get, you know, Matt Damon or Brad Pitt to do it in order to get it made. And this is one of those cases where they're like, we like the, you know, we don't need to find a star to make it. Blue Crush the same way. You know, Into the Blue, a little weird because it wasn't supposed to be a Paul Walker movie, and all of a sudden it was a Paul Walker movie, but...
Is that a liberating thing to not have a major star on set to, you know, like a Brad Pitt or a Matt Damon to have sort of those demands that might go with
it? Well, it's liberating to not have to necessarily get one in order to get the movie made, because most movies are stalled or, you know, you like hear that story with Darren Aronofsky in The Fountain, you just go, oh, if that happened to me, I don't know if I could survive. I mean, he barely survived. You know, you got Brad Pitt and you're like making the movie and you're building your sets and all of a sudden... And Brad's like, you know what? I don't want to do it. And you know, and I've done it a little. You know, it's not that I don't want to do it. I've experienced a little bit. I'm experiencing now where I'm going and doing that dance with an actor. Where you're like, do I like you? Do you like me? And it's a little bit of a seduction process. And you know, I'm glad that I haven't had to do it, but I. It would be interesting to go through it. I don't know. I've never really experienced it. I've never had a prima donna, anyway.
How excited are you to see Kate Bosworth become a superstar?
I love Kate. I mean, all anyone ever asks me about is her weight now. I'm like, I don't know. I guess she's thin. Like, what can I say? She was thin when she came in and read for me first, and I was like, oh, you're never going to be a surfer. Like, you're way too... You don't look like... And she's like, don't worry, I can bulk up, I'm going to train. And I was like, well, go out and train for a couple of weeks. Learn to... And let me see you. And she came back, and she like put on 10 pounds. And I think she's naturally thin. She's probably, for whatever reason, thinner than she normally is. But it must be so painful to like pick up Us magazine and like hear them talking about how anorexic and terrible you look.
But just, I mean, she's the female lead in Superman.
Yeah.
I mean,
she can do better than that. I didn't really like her in that. I mean, I liked her, but I was like, I think she's, first of all, she's a really smart girl. You know, she just got into Princeton, deferred. She kept saying, oh, I'm going to go back to college. I was like, sure, Kate. Never did. Probably never will. But she's such a smart girl, and I think everyone is kind of, as actors are, you know, they can only do what can be done with the opportunities that are presented to them. So I hope she gets many more really interesting acting opportunities. And she's smart. Like, she did a small role in Rules of Engagement, and what else did she do? That Johnny Holmes movie. What was that Val Kilmer movie? With
Wonderland.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. Like, I think that would be like a really smart thing for like the Superman dude to do. Like a Brandon Routh to go off and do some weird small role in a fringe movie, and you know, otherwise he's always going to be Superman.
Well, he's trying to sell a short film on iTunes.
He is? Brandon is?
Yeah.
Is something he directed?
He's in it. I think his girlfriend directed it. I don't know if that's the same one, but just the other night, he was telling my readers, look for my short film on iTunes.
Can anyone post their film on iTunes?
Yeah.
Anyone?
Well, I mean, how do you get on iTunes?
Everything winds up on iTunes.
On YouTube or iTunes?
iTunes is separate.
No, I know iTunes is separate, but... Well, I know anyone can post on YouTube, but you also can't get any revenue from YouTube. I mean, but it's interesting to think that someone could put a short film on... I've never seen a short film on iTunes.
I was going to move in a different direction, but you've been in the industry for about 25 years. I know it's a tough number. So I wanted to know, do you, you know, how has it changed? How can you, have you seen the industry change at all? You know, or...
You know, I was so unaware of, like, the industry when I was an actor. It seemed really... maybe because I came out and sort of stumbled into it, it didn't seem that hard. You know, it seemed like, oh, yeah, you get this part, and then there were all these teen movies being made, and it just seemed like there was a proliferation of them, and, you know, I was in my science project and losing it, and Top, you know, it was like there was just so many of those movies, and it seemed like I just worked with the same people over and over again, and there was the Brat Pack, and now it's the fewer of those kinds of movies are getting made, although this new genre of horror thriller is sort of picking up the slack of what used to be the sort of teen comedy, John Hughes type of movies. It's certainly gotten more corporate, and it's gotten maybe more, I mean, there's certainly more of an emphasis on everyone just, you know, knows box office revenues now, I leave town when I have a movie coming out. I mean, I go someplace that has no internet, no phone, because it's just too stressful. I mean, unless you know you have Spider-Man 3 and you're like going to have a huge hit, like, fuck that. Who wants to stick around and endure? People go around in limousines to movies. Like, I can't even imagine that. Like, what if you saw someone leaving? Like, what if you saw someone what if you went in the bathroom and someone was trashing your movie? Like, that's just too... it's too hard for me to handle. I can't stand the NRG screenings because they're so stressful, and you see one person get up to go to the bathroom, you're sure that everyone's just going to leave. And now screenings now, so much of how... whether a film even gets released, the marketing budget, the number of screens is all based upon that screening you have in Woodland Hills, and the number, that person who comes in with the number, you're shaking. Like, it's that high stakes now, and I don't remember any of that from, but I wasn't really exposed to that as an actor. I think they had those same kind of test audiences, but now everything is so test driven that, you know, between that and internet chatter, that sort of your fate is basically determined before movie even comes out.
You put yourself in this movie right at the end. Was that just for fun, or are you going to do that in every movie now?
No. I looked at it, I was like, oh, that was kind of a goof, kind of, because it was really expensive to fly American actors to, I mean, the girl is one of the, is Max's real girlfriend who happened to be there, so we didn't have to pay her, and then I was there, so I didn't have to pay myself to fly down. It's expensive to, like, fly.
So those two characters were in the script, and he says, don't take the bus, and that was in the script already?
Yes,
so
that was in the script, but casting it was kind of a money-saving thing.
What's going to be on the DVD?
In terms of extras, you mean? Well, I mean, we did an unrated, which has got some kind of semi-crazy stuff on it. We did, like, there's a pretty cool making of. We had a guy that was there the whole time and mostly got the partying in Brazil and some of the insanity that went on off set, which I think is in many ways more interesting than what's happening on the set. There's a whole kind of underwater making of, a special effects thing, how certain things were done. I mean, I haven't seen it. It's all kind of being done right now.
Is that unrated thing kind of just, they go into saying, we'll sell more DVDs if you do two different cuts?
It's certainly a marketing thing. I mean, I actually asked the same question because I'd never done it before, and I was like, our producer did the unrated version of the what's the Bret Easton Ellis book that was made into a movie? Not Rules of what?
American Psycho.
American Psycho. And he said the difference between unrated and rated was like two thrusts. He's fucking some girl, and like the MPA made them cut out one thrust. They put in the extra thrust and released it as an unrated, and that's the only difference. And they sold so many more. The unrated sold more. In our case, we actually did have to do some somewhat drastic cuts for the MPAA, and then I, you know, had some extra kind of pervy stuff that I put back.
Gore?
No,
gore?
Sex. You know, just there's a more explicit scene with the guy and the girl and the prostitute that kind of gets a little crazier. There's more stuff with Bo. Yeah, it's definitely a marketing thing. Everyone falls for it, though. I mean, I think I was like, doesn't it have to be longer? They go, no, usually they're like 3 seconds longer. There's really not, unless it's a director's cut, which I didn't do. You know, I did just the unrated version.
How did Mark Cuban and Todd Wagner come aboard, or were they aboard from the beginning?
No, it started with a guy named Bozanga, who's involved in the whole lawsuit with Pelicano. So he's an interesting character. And then it went to a guy named Scott Steindorf, who's a great guy. And then it came to Todd and Mark, and they financed and made it. You know, they effectively paid for the whole thing. So they were involved, but they came in, you know, it came through some other parties, actually. And Mark, I think the NBA season was underway, so you don't really see much of Mark when the Mavericks are playing. But Todd was around.
So I mean, with people like that who are definitely very, not I don't want to say controlling, but are very, I mean, they know what they want, you know, something like that. Do they kind of say yes, no, or do they let you go?
Absolute total freedom from Todd. Now, he has people who work with him and under him, Mark Butan, who definitely has an opinion. He's on the set, and Kent, and there are people there. It was a pretty free experience, though. Mark Cuban has way too much shit to worry about. And Todd, again, he's good at delegating, came to Brazil a couple of times, you know, flew in on a private plane, had bodyguards. Hi, you know. Smart guy, though, like, knows what he wants, but doesn't try to micromanage.
Have they seen the final cut?
Mm-hmm.
And are they pleased?
Yeah, they, like, Todd gave notes, and we did his notes, and, you know, they were smart notes. I mean, I don't think I'd know if they weren't pleased.
Yeah.
Who the fuck knows? Like, with any of these things, you don't really, it's just, the only, that's why I actually, as much as people say they don't read critics, I think in some ways it's the only truly unvarnished response. Whether you agree or disagree, I mean, there's no agreeing or disagreeing. It's like, you're a movie premiere, everyone could have fucking hated it, but everyone comes up to you, it's the best movie ever made. You know, even at these junkets, like, you know, you can kind of read between the lines, but you don't really know. And then you go on Rotten Tomatoes, and you're like, oh, really? Or it's nice, like, you know, like, I can't help myself, like, Thursday night, oh, we're fresh, we're rotten, like, the other guy from fucking, you know, Schenectady hates it. But there's a reason that they, you know, the reason that, I mean, I look, a movie like this you don't make to get, to necessarily get great critical response, but still, at the same time, you hope that you, like, a little person will go, well, for this kind of movie, it's like, okay. You know, you want that little bit of affirmation that you look for, but it's, what was your question?
Oh, no, it's just, are they pleased? But
oh, are they pleased?
Yeah.
I guess I was saying, who knows?
Yeah.
They tell me they are.
I was going to say, but Schenectady, but if...
They asked me to do another movie.
Oh, well,
actually, that is, I think they are pleased, because they asked me to do another movie.
Oh, what are you going to be doing?
It's called Villain. All takes place in the snow. In Alaska. No bikinis, yeah.
Cool. Are you one of those collaborative directors, or are you like, I got my vision and keep doing it till you get it my way?
I used to be more like that, and I think I'm learning to be more collaborative. I guess I was just so insecure and worried about... I mean, partially, there's a difference between being collaborative in the post-process, which is... you have more time and you have an avid and you can take it apart and put it back together, and I'm really learned that that's a place where you can bring people into. On the set, it's a little dangerous to start appearing like, what do you think, what should we do? And then all of a sudden there's this kind of vacuum that everyone wants to fill, and all of a sudden you never finish your days. In a way, for better or worse, you have to say, you know, you may be right, but this is the way we're doing it, and we can't do it 5 different ways because we don't have the time or the money, so that's what I've learned.
What about that bus scene in the opening of the movie? It seems like, you know, it's kind of a one and done thing. It doesn't seem like you keep setting it up or something.
No, when that bus went over, it was done. We almost went over with it because we were shooting inside, and it was this whole rig on the edge of the thing, like, shaking, and then one of the cables snapped, and my DP, I was like, holy shit, this is like Brazil filmmaking for you. But thankfully, they had a safety cable, so we didn't go.
There was no CG bus going down that hill.
No.
It was on the...
No. In fact, there were like some houses, typical like third world filmmaking. There were some houses like on the side, and almost ran, you know, almost flipped over the house. So yeah, there was no CG in that.
How would you describe this film? Just in like a general.
Oh, God, I don't know. Can't do it. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, everyone puts it in a category and types it. I sort of saw it as a. I always love Deliverance. Not that this is it, but I love the idea of people going into a situation which they think is going to be one thing, having it, you know, and having their lives be forever changed for having undergone it. But it took place in a world that may or may not be real. Sort of feels like you could stumble upon it if you went down the wrong road. You know, that's the movie I reference, not Hostel.
It would be a torture
with a purpose. A socialist, yeah, mindset. Like Deliverance had a kind of quasi-political message underlying it, and that's what maybe this one does a little bit.
Coming up on the end of the year, who would you call the entertainer of the year?
Besides Josh Duhamel? Entertainer of the year?
Yeah. Wow.
Dude, I don't know. What? I mean, I love The Departed. Like, I think Scorsese is fine. He's going to win Best Director, and that's going to win Best Picture. I hope. I didn't love Babel. Like, I didn't love it the way people. I mean, I know it's going to get nominated, but I hope The Departed wins. What do you think? Who is?
Frontrunners have.
Of course,
been
I mean,
Sacha Baron Cohen.
Oh yeah, I'm called Sacha.
Trying to entertain. Like,
oh, well, of course, Sacha Baron Cohen. Yeah.
Or Daniel Craig.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but yeah, Sacha Cohen. He's cool. Like, I know Isla Fisher a little bit, and she told me some. I mean, she's really worried about him, his safety. Like, she was just like, I don't want him to do this anymore because he's been in so many harrowing situations, and he doesn't really have security. And you know, he's going to get shot. Like, some of these situations he put himself, he's going to get shot or badly beat up, I think. Brave. Well, they just don't get it. Like, especially the you know, if he's doing the what's the other character, the gay Bruno. Like, he starts doing that in places. Yeah. People, like, they just can't handle it. Like, all right, thank you guys.